This Civic Media podcast is sponsored by UW Organ and Tissue Donation. Organ donations are desperately needed, and now is the right time to become an organ donor. Talk to your family. Get the dot. Save lives. Go to heroicdeed.com.
It is January 1, 2025, the first day of the new year. My name is Jim Santel, and this is the Maggie Dawn Show. I'm going to be your host for this hour and next hour as Maggie takes a brief time away from Civic Media. She'll be back again very soon. A sobering day, a sobering first day of this month, this year. The first day of this year brings with it an awful lot of tragedy in America. And we're going to spend some time necessarily on this, the Maggie Dawn Show, on New Year's Day, talking about violence in America because it has visited us once again. We have seen this before. We'll talk about some of the precedents that we have regrettably seen in our nation and in our world, having to do with people using vehicles as the mechanisms of death and carnage and terrorism. All of that on the Maggie Dawn Show here on the broadcast stations of Civic Media. Thank you for joining me on this first day of this new year. I'm here in the studios of Civic Media with my terrific producer, Cardi, and together we're going to be taking your phone calls as well at 855-752-4842. Cardi also reminds me routinely that you can also be a part of our discussion, inquiries, questions of me, of the subjects on our agenda this afternoon, by not only calling in, but also dropping those comments, those inquiries into our chat box, into the Civic Media drop box, being a part of our discussion. Delighted that you are with us on this first day of January of 2025, even as our agenda changes dramatically based upon the events of just recent hours on New Year's Day, 2025. Thank you once again for being a part of our discussion, being a part of our consumption of the news in America. Necessarily at the top of our discussion agenda here on the Maggie Dawn Show on this afternoon on January 1 of 2025 is the calamity in New Orleans on Bourbon Street. What do we know already about what happened? Well, we know a lot of things, and Cardi, just in a moment or so, is going to play a little bit more updated information. But we know that sometime around 3:15 a.m., somewhat after the January 1st, the New Year celebrations were concluding, not quite concluded, plainly, but coming to closer to an end, a person drove a truck down Bourbon Street. The latest report is that he drove that truck into a crowd. Latest report is that not just 10, but as many as 15 people killed, 30 or more injured in the melee that followed this latest horrific attack in America. What do we know about what's going on? A little bit of commentary from me about the law enforcement side of this right after chatting about what we know about who this is. Police have identified the assailant here. He is no longer alive because after doing this, he engaged law enforcement in a shootout. His name is Shamshud Din Jabbar. He's 42. He's a United States citizen. He's a U.S. Army veteran. He is a citizen, a resident of Texas. And he, by all indications, is at least one of the people responsible for this, certainly the principal focus of this inquiry up to this point. Shamshud Din Jabbar, 42, United States citizen, a resident of Texas, doing this in New Orleans in the French Quarter. As celebrants continue to welcome in the new year, again, at least 15 people killed, 30 injured as a result of that. Some significant things also coming out of the first reports from law enforcement on this, which are significant, about which I will comment too. And that is that while he was using his truck, we also know that he had weapons in that truck, obviously engaging the shootout at the end of it. We also know that he had at least one IED. That's an improvised explosive device. That's the acronym for an improvised explosive device. When I was in Iraq, regrettably became much too familiar with IEDs. These things put together by individuals to create havoc, to create the melee they'd intended to create. At least one of those also in the truck along with weapons. And apparently some of them also found, or at least being looked for, in the area in and around this attack. That is one significant thing that comes out of this, plainly a redundancy in his plans for an attack. We also know just from recent reporting that he also had an ISIS flag on the truck. And that has prompted the FBI, stunningly, shockingly, to say that we believe that he may not have acted alone. And plainly, the investigation now, local in nature, statewide in nature, certainly going into Texas, other places, also now looking overseas as a result of that connection, arguably to others who may be involved, the FBI suggesting, they don't do this lightly, suggesting that there may be others involved, maybe some other forces and other people responsible behind the scenes, part of a conspiracy perhaps, as a result of this melee. Again, early morning on this, the first day of January 2025. Cardi has some news reporting on this. Cardi, can we bring that up and consume what the reporters are saying now in New Orleans?
Certainly. One second. Here we go.
With major breaking news, at least 10 people are dead, more than 30 others injured, after police say a man intentionally drove into a crowd of people in New Orleans. We've also learned that man is dead after getting into a shootout with police. And this all happened just a few hours into the new year as people were still celebrating along Bourbon Street, one of the largest destinations for New Year's Eve parties. Just recently, the FBI announced they are investigating this as an act of terrorism, saying there were improvised explosive devices found in that area. We begin here with CBS's Katie Weiss.
Just hours into the new year, celebration turned to chaos in New Orleans after a truck plowed through a crowd on the city's iconic Bourbon Street.
He was hell-bent on creating the carnage and the damage that he did. It was very intentional behavior. This man was trying to run over as many people as he possibly could.
The incident unfolded shortly after 3 a.m. local time.
We heard loud banging sounds.
This witness did not want to be on camera.
We looked out the window, we noticed there was a lot of bodies laying on the ground.
Witnesses told me, because I was there just moments after this happened, and people were scared. They were terrified.
The FBI says the suspect died after a firefight with police. The agency has taken the lead on the investigation and is looking into the incident as an act of terrorism.
The city of New Orleans was impacted by a terrorist attack.
The mayor warned people to stay away from the Bourbon Street area as the FBI investigated what appeared to be at least one improvised explosive device. The incident happened hours before the kickoff of a college football quarterfinal in the city's Superdome. Police said they're making sure the area is safe for the game. Katie Weiss, CBS News.
Cardi, thank you for that. Updates even on all of this late breaking news, in addition to this notion that the FBI is looking beyond just this individual person who is responsible, apparently, for the attack again. Shamsuddin Jabbar, 42. He's from Texas, United States citizen. Reason to believe, according to the FBI, that he may not have been acting alone. The FBI does not say that unless they have some reason to believe that this is beyond just the particular target of the investigation, plainly not disclosing more. Certainly throughout the day, today and in the days just ahead, more information coming out as the sweep, as the investigation runs. You just heard from the mayor of New Orleans. Her name is LaToya Cantrell, and she has not only spoken on behalf of the citizens, the residents of New Orleans, but of all of the members of that state, the citizens of of Louisiana, all of us in America, all of us around the world who are concerned about safety, security in public places. She has also talked about the international focus and the national focus of this investigation, talking about the notion of federal support. And in that connection, not only do we have this information from the FBI, from local police about this, but we also know that the Attorney General Merrick Garland, consistent with what the mayor has just said, also confirming that the FBI, the ATF, the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms are, of course, responsible for. They've got the expertise when it comes to firearms, tracing those kinds of things. And also local and state prosecutors, National Security Division of the Department of Justice. That doesn't happen lightly either. Local federal prosecutors and law enforcement also working on what the FBI, what local authorities are identifying now as a terrorism case, a case of terrorism, domestic terrorism to be sure, but terrorism nonetheless. The Attorney General saying right after this happened, my heart is broken for those who began their year by learning people they love were killed in this horrific attack. He vowed to deploy every available resource to conduct this investigation. Obviously, he also in connection with local and state authorities, including the governor, Governor Landry there, the mayor, and others. The White House has also confirmed, of course, that President Biden has been briefed on this as he is heading off to Camp David, echoed the concerns of the Attorney General and others. Many hotels in the area are evacuated. District Attorney for the parish there said, he said some people were also displaced as a result of this. We also know that the city of New Orleans at the time was upgrading what are called bollards, B-O-L-L-A-R-D-S. They're basically some obstruction. They're sort of large pieces of either metal or short, thick posts that are intended to obstruct the movement of vehicles into this area. Some construction apparently going on, and the attacker here using the opportunity, seeing some of those bollards, those obstructive devices not in place, goes around them and drives into this public group of people. The project involved replacing those old bollards with removable stainless steel ones. And the police superintendent, Ann Kirkpatrick, said the suspect circumvented those barricades that were otherwise in place. That will plainly be the focus of a lot of post-incident review. What could have, what should have happened, what might have happened had those bollards been in place. And especially at a time and a location where huge numbers of people are gathering. The New Orleans Attorney General, the District Attorney, said that law enforcement officers are ready to deal with any event. The individual has a mindset on hurting as many people as he could. Our response, he said, is swift and overwhelming. As the Maggie Dawn Show continues on this first day of the new year, more commentary and news reporting from New Orleans here on Civic Media.
You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
This is the Maggie Dawn Show on the broadcast stations of Civic Media, a sobering first day of the new year. As we talk here on the Maggie Dawn Show, my name is Jim Santel. I'm also the host of the Saturday program called Amicus Law Review. We'll talk more about some programming notes related to that later on in this hour and next hour as well. Sitting in for Maggie during this time of holiday. And also during this time of tragedy, once again, visiting America, this time in New Orleans in the French Quarter, a place of great celebration until about 3 o'clock in the morning when this individual, his name is Jabbar, drove his truck into a crowded area right there on Bourbon Street. Reports now at least 15 people killed, many more, 30 injured, at least 35 taken to the hospital. All of this happening once again on the first day of the new year. Significant also that just in the last several minutes, the chief executive of the Sugar Bowl committee, his name is Jeff Hundley. The game is scheduled to be played tonight in the Superdome, just blocks from where this attack took place, just announcing that because of this terrible thing, this horrific assault upon America, deaths of individuals, injuries to many others, because of that, the Sugar Bowl being postponed for 24 hours and affirming, as he said, the terrible events, being devastated by the terrible events from early this morning, and focusing, obviously, upon that, as opposed to the immediacy of the Sugar Bowl, but indicating as well as it is rescheduled for tomorrow night that sports and the other things that we value in America go on, and that even in the midst of this horrific event, this assault upon our safety and security, the only way that these kinds of people succeed is if we respond to this in a way that changes our own affirmation of the good things about America. And so the Sugar Bowl postponed appropriately for one day. Many other things, obviously, undeniably postponed, delayed, and never happening for at least 15 people, for many other injured in the course of this melee attack. What else do we know about what happened here? Again, the FBI, in addition to local authorities, the ATF, announcing the death of this assailant, Jabbar, during the course of a shootout. Why is it significant that the FBI is also telling us that there may be other people involved? We know that there was something related to ISIS, perhaps a flag that was in the truck as well. That certainly raises the connection of an overseas involvement in this in some way. We do not know. We do not know if he was effectively encouraged to do this by virtue of his online viewing, by virtue of his contact, communications with other people, all of that very speculative and appropriate. The FBI is not saying anything about that, but the investigation plainly leading in the direction of more than one person involved, and indeed, maybe an international connection here as well, describing this already as domestic terrorism, that is, its attempt to undermine, once again, the safety and security of government, and most importantly, of the public generally, by terrorizing. There is a very specific definition of terrorism in the federal code, many state codes as well, and this fits it. And that is why it is being investigated as a case of terrorism, and plainly with some reason to believe that that's exactly what has happened here. We know as well, based upon the things that the FBI, the ATF, local law enforcement has said, that he also had redundant weapons with him. He had plainly the assault weapons that he used in this event. He had, in addition, at least one IED, some other IEDs apparently in the area. The local authorities and the federal authorities still looking for those. And of course, he had the truck itself, a weapon of increasing assault in America and beyond. Let's talk about that for just one moment. This is not regrettably new to America. Among other instances of cases like this, August of 2017, I suspect you remember well, the attack by a white supremacist on the peaceful protesters in Charlottesville, Virginia. Heather Heyer killed in that attack. Many others injured by a truck going into the crowded area there in Charlottesville. That was in 2017. In 2016, we had a similar incident in Berlin. We've had these in France many years ago, in New York City as well. And perhaps most recently, we've reported here on the broadcast stations of Civic Media all about that German Christmas market assault. Two killed there, 65 injured. Law enforcement there still investigating motives for the driving of a truck into that crowded area as well. We have precedent for this, and it continues here on the first day of January of 2025. Other things being said, of course, as the country, the nation, and its leaders react to all of this. We know that the attack took place once again in the French Quarter, one of the most crowded areas of New Orleans, and certainly on January 1 in particular. Ann Kirkpatrick, the city's police superintendent, said that it appeared that most of those who were dead, most of those injured, were locals versus tourists. All of that coming out of law enforcement authority right now in New Orleans. 30 people, at least 30, perhaps 35 injured in the attack. Captain Janik Lewis, a spokesman for the New Orleans Emergency Services, said that virtually all of those injured were taken by ambulance to five different hospitals in the area. 14 of them to the University Medical Center, a level one trauma center. Additional people injured sought care at hospitals on their own. Captain Lewis reporting on all of that. Again, all of this happening as investigators continue to find what appear to be improvised explosive devices at the scene of the crash, now trying to determine whether or not those devices were viable. That according to the FBI as well. When we come back, some final commentary on this. Also taking your calls on this sobering day, this summary first day of January, 855-752-4842 as the Maggie Dawn Show continues here on the broadcast stations of Civic Media.
You're an organ donor, right? Well, here's a tragic fact. Approximately 20 people die each day waiting for precious donated organs. You could make a life-saving decision simply by getting that important dot on your driver's license. That little dot shows those who need to know that you've made a decision to donate organs at a critical time. Go to heroicdeed.com to learn more about the importance of organ donation and how you can make your wishes known. Talk to your family. Get the dot. Save lives. HeroicDeed.com.
This is the Maggie Dawn Show on the broadcast stations of Civic Media. My name is Jim Santel. I am sitting in guest hosting for Maggie on this first day of 2025 and taking in the very sobering news coming out of New Orleans, talking a lot about what we know to this point. It is always important, of course, to ensure that law enforcement is given the opportunity to investigate fully before coming to conclusions. But there are some things that we know already from what has been reported here, and that is that the assailant here, a fellow named Shamshud Dinjabar, a 42, a U.S. citizen from Texas, had multiple sort of called redundant mechanisms for his particular form of terrorism. That included not only his truck, but also weapons and also improvised explosive devices. These things that in the United States and around the world can be put together in your own basement, not necessarily manufactured in a more formal way by a company or an agency, but put together improvised explosive devices as a part of this. Also a part of what is often viewed as an international, perhaps foreign involvement in this kind of terrorism. Significant to ponder that as law enforcement is pursuing the options of what exactly happened here, the motivations by Jabbar in doing this. As we do so, we think about what terrorism is all about, the federal definition of terrorism. There is a statute, there's a federal statute that makes it clear that terrorism is the unlawful use of violence or the threat of violence to intimidate or coerce a government, civilian populations, or a segment of that population. The goal is to further political or social objectives. The FBI, law enforcement generally, divides this into domestic terrorism. That is those things that may or may not have a foreign direction. Violent acts committed by individuals or groups within the United States, motivated by some ideological goals, such as those of a political, a religious, a social, a racial, or an environmental nature. And of course, there's international terrorism as well. Individuals or groups who are inspired by or associated with some foreign terrorist organization or nations. And the reason why all of that is important is because, again, law enforcement continues to affirm that there is evidence that there's more than one person involved in this, perhaps even some larger association. So there may be aspects of both domestic and international terrorism here. The ISIS connection, that flag, which apparently is either attached to, somehow appears with the truck. The significance of that cannot be overstated. And that, too, will animate a lot of the investigation going forward in the hours, the days, the weeks, the months just ahead, trying to figure out not only what happened here, what the motivation was, but also, importantly, if there are other people, other actors, other bad actors, other mal actors out there, who they are, how this happened. The FBI, again, at the lead of this, according to the Attorney General and other law enforcement, coming from Bourbon Street there, coming from Washington, D.C., as this matter percolates up and out. And once again, the multiple redundant mechanisms for violence that this assailant had also suggest a very much premeditated, a very much methodical approach to what he was going to do. This is not someone who simply decided to drive his truck at the last minute into this crowd, as horrific as that has been and is here in other situations as well. Here you've got someone who plainly putting together the mechanisms and the means, redundant mechanisms for making an attack upon Americans, upon people celebrating the first day of the new year there in New Orleans in the French Quarter. We know now as well that the Sugar Bowl now postponed appropriately for one day. But once again, in the category of ensuring that America does not change its fundamental commitment to the good things and the right things that this nation is all about, getting on with the business of America, much like we saw on January 6th of 2021, when the leadership of this nation decided to go ahead and count those electoral ballots in Washington, D.C., in the well of the Congress, even though an attack had just taken place, that commitment to the future and sending the message once again that terrorism, yes, does have its impact. It is known well by at least the 15 people now, their families who've been lost in this, many others, 35 or more injured, known well by all of us. At the same time, ensuring that that terrorism, domestic foreign terrorism, does not overtake us. And that even on this first day of 2025, a recommission to safety and security beyond what individuals like this particular person and perhaps others decided to do to affect the peace and to upset the security of this celebration. President Biden on his way to his stay in Camp David, commenting on this, echoing exactly that sentiment. President-elect Trump also at Mar-a-Lago, likewise condemning the attack and supporting the law enforcement that is responding right now to this and committing, as both of them have, as past presidents have, as future presidents, future leaders in all branches of government must, the commitment to investigate and to stop this kind of behavior in the future. All of that happening as we continue to hear more about what's going on there in New Orleans. Here on the broadcast stations of Civic Media, also taking your comments, your observations on this latest horrific event, a terrorist event in America. At, of course, our station here, 855-752-4842. That's the phone number. You can also text us, and my terrific producer, Cardi, and I will make you a part of our discussion here on the Maggie Dawn Show. Regrettably, it is not only New Orleans that suffers from this kind of upsettedness and this violence that has shaken our safety and security and compromised the lives and the safety of people. New York, just in the last several hours, has also seen violence. We know that a 23-year-old man was arrested. He was charged with attempted murder just yesterday, hours after a man waiting on a Manhattan subway platform was violently shoved into the path of an oncoming train. The victim was in critical condition, but stable condition at Bellevue Hospital there in New York. The man arrested in this shoving incident, his name is Kamel Hawkins, also charged with second-degree assault, a string of past arrests on charges of assault and harassment and weapons possession, according to police records. What happened here? The video of the attack appears to show about 1:30 p.m. yesterday. A man in an orange jacket appears to be looking down at his phone, presumably the victim of this shoving, standing near the edge of the southbound platform at the 18th Street number 1 station there in Manhattan. A person in a dark coat is then seen passing behind him in the orange jacket before doubling back and shoving him forcibly off the platform and into the path of a southbound train. People were there at the time, again, responded, a group of firefighters pulling the victim out from between the trains onto the platform, lying flat, a victim, plainly, of this horrific event. An onlooker reports he's alive as a hand moves, and again, he has been taken immediately to the hospital. As that is investigated further, Bellevue Hospital there in Manhattan. Power to the tracks was shut off for about an hour at the time before the Metropolitan Transportation Authority said service resumed at about 4 p.m. or so. Many people recounting now their events there. That also plainly an event that mars the celebration that should be going on when we welcome a new year. Carter, you've got some audio on that event as well, the subway shooting in New York.
New details tonight in a horrific New Year's Eve subway attack. A man facing an attempted murder charge, accused of pushing another man onto the tracks at the 18th Street station in Chelsea. Fox 5's Meredith Gorman is at the 59th Street Columbus Circle station, where the suspect was taken into custody and has the very latest.
Take a look at this video of the suspect, who is accused of pushing a 45-year-old man in front of a moving southbound 1 train at 18th Street and 7th Avenue around 1:30 p.m. on New Year's Eve. He's been identified as 23-year-old Kamel Hawkins of Brooklyn after being apprehended at Columbus Circle. He's being charged with attempted murder in the second degree and assault in the second degree. The victim was taken to Bellevue Hospital and is listed in stable condition. As you can see in this video here, taken by a witness who saw the assault take place on the subway platform, he's alive while being lifted out from the tracks between the trains by firefighters, leaving subway riders in a state of fear by this random act of violence.
I have my 15-year-old with me, and I was like, step a little bit further away, and every time I looked down there, I was like, this is something that could happen. So I actually already kind of had that little bit of anxiety from just what I've seen in the media.
Me and my baby won't be on this train no more. I know that much. That's it. That was it for me. I didn't need one more. And we're not doing three strikes. Two strikes, that was it.
Mayor Eric Adams saying the city will have...
And all of that, of course, happening in New York on New Year's Eve in the subways there. And we know that that happened just hours after authorities identified a woman who on December 22nd, right before the Christmas and Hanukkah and other holidays, was fatally burned there on the subway as well. A woman who had died after being set on fire in the New York subway just days before Christmas and Hanukkah, identified as Debrina Kowam. She was 57, of Toms River, New Jersey. The medical examiner providing that information about that horrific event. The event appeared to have happened again on the 22nd of December. What appeared to have happened was that the person here, the individual who was, again, taken into custody, Sebastian Zepeda, a 33-year-old Guatemalan citizen charged with murder and arson after allegedly lighting Ms. Kowam on fire and watching her burn to death at a subway station, arrested about 6 hours after police said he used a lighter to ignite the clothes of Ms. Kowam, who appeared to be dozing on a stationary F train at the Coney Island Sitwell Avenue stop in Brooklyn. That, again, the announcement of the victim of that horrific event from a number of days ago, just happening hours before the shoving happens again And we have additional events. Again, stabbings also in New York, regrettably marring the celebration that should be going on in New York and throughout America today. We know as well that an unidentified suspect fled the 14th Street station in Lower Manhattan earlier today after allegedly stabbing a 31-year-old man on a northbound 2 train before fleeing the streets. That happened about 9:45, police confirming that. Suspect described as someone wearing a black puffer jacket, dark sweatpants, carrying a red suitcase. That stabbing happening again in New York. And yet we've got another event. Another event involving a stabbing at a homeless shelter in Brooklyn, in Brownsville. And Carter, you've got some audio on that horrific event as well.
A developing story tonight in Brooklyn where a worker at a homeless shelter was stabbed to death. This happened around 6:15 this evening at a shelter on East New York Avenue in Brownsville. Police say someone stabbed that 36-year-old man in the neck and stomach inside the building. So far, no arrest.
All of that happening again in New York City just in the last several hours. Obviously, joining the grief, joining the sadness that we have for all the victims, all of those injured, the larger community also plainly victimized. But what happens there in New York? What happens in New Orleans as that investigation continues here on Civic Media, obviously on the Maggie Dawn Show and on other broadcasts of the days just ahead? We'll be following these and other stories. This is undeniably not the agenda that we had planned for January 1. Cardi and I were going to talk about some things, and we will talk about some of those things that are also in the news in recent days, and that includes the president, the current president, signing legislation, a report from the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court, a loss by the incoming president, and yes, in the second hour of the Maggie Dawn Show, we're going to spend some time talking about Jimmy Carter, his legacy as the 39th president of the United States of America. All that on the Maggie Dawn Show here on the broadcast stations of Civic Media.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
This is the Maggie Dawn Show. My name is Jim Santel. I am the guest host for Maggie today. This first day of January of 2025, Happy New Year, everyone. Happy New Year here in the state of Wisconsin, throughout our nation, across our planet. Indeed, there are reasons to be positive about the future. Let's talk about some of those things that have happened here in recent days that do not erase the horrific events, the violence of just the past several hours, but nonetheless, give us hope. Beyond what would be the terrorist activity, the terrorist events that would try to undermine our safety and security going forward. President Biden, our present president for about 2 more weeks or so, is 3 more weeks, actually, is just recently signing about 50 different bills on Christmas Eve, on the beginning of Hanukkah in America and around the planet. Let's talk about some of those major pieces of legislation that Joe Biden has just signed that, again, are intended to not only address the kinds of sobering issues that we've been discussing here on the Maggie Dawn Show, but also to protect our most vulnerable populations and all of us as we go forward. Let's begin by talking about 5 of those pieces of legislation in this, the remaining segment of this hour, and then continuing into the second hour here on the Maggie Dawn Show. One of the important pieces of legislation that the president has signed is called the Stop Institutional Child Abuse Act. That's a lot of words. It's very important in terms of responding to the trauma that is sometimes experienced after young people are sent to various therapies that are uncredited, unauthorized, and are pursuing attempts to address children issues without the professional skill and support that they should have. You may recall that Paris Hilton actually was a champion for this legislation. This is bipartisan legislation. The president signed it on Christmas Eve on the 24th. It looks to reform the troubled teen industry, particularly residential programs. Institutions, people, entities that do not have the skill sets, do not have the professional background to address the psychological issues, the behavioral issues that the teens often need. Paris Hilton has become an advocate for more regulations, and she shared her own traumatizing experience after herself being sent to a wilderness therapy program in Utah. She described being abused. She was placed in solitary confinement. She was violently restrained, and she was force-fed drugs. All of that, according to her testimony in recent times for the Congress. The Congress responds to that and other instances of child abuse, youth abuse, at the hands of people who have no business engaging in this kind of important treatment because they do not have the professional background, the experience, and the other insight to do this well. The industry, where programs may be operated by those with no professional training in mental health or child development, has had little oversight. That came out of the congressional review of this entire problem, and therefore allowed programs of the sort that Paris Hilton described to operate despite repeated allegations of abuse. President Biden, on December 24th, has executed legislation, and that legislation is intended to stop that institutional child abuse by providing strict regulations, conditions, terms, and the mechanisms for ensuring that children who are appropriately and rightly provided with psychological and other forms of care get that care from people who are experienced, who are trained, who know what they're doing, and that abuse does not happen in that setting. The Congress, in a bipartisan legislation, now the law of the state of the United States of America, the Stop Institutional Child Abuse Act, one of 50 different pieces of legislation signed by the president just before the holidays here. On a little lighter note, as we conclude our last segment here in the first hour, the president also signed legislation making the bald eagle our national bird. That law may seem like something that should have already been happened, but for nearly 250 years, that bird, of course, has appeared as an emblem on everything from currency to the national seal. It was not officially the national bird. Indigenous only to North America, the bald eagle was once nearing extinction, but has since seen a real population increase since about 2009. It was also already protected under the National Emblem Act, which made it illegal to sell or hunt the birds. President Biden, again, based upon bipartisan legislation, now clearly establishing, finally, the national bird of the United States of America as the bird of brown and white feathers, the bald eagle, now officially the national bird on the Great Seal of the United States. As you may recall from your own history lessons, Benjamin Franklin had some disagreement with this. It raised his ire because he considered this a bird of bad moral character. But nonetheless, here about 248 years later, the United States Congress, and based upon the legislation signed by our president, we have a national bird. It is the bald eagle. And that legislation, of course, an historical symbol of the United States representing independence, strength, and freedom. Those the comments made by bipartisan supporters in Congress, Senator Amy Klobuchar and Representative Brad Finstead, both of Minnesota, heralding the announcement that the bald eagle is now our national bird. As we continue with the review of some of the major legislation signed by the president in the waning days of this year, we're also going to talk about three other pieces of legislation also important to protect and prevent have all sorts of attacks upon our safety and security, the Native American Child Protection Act, the Stop Campus Hazing Act, and the No Corruption Act, all of that entered into the legislative records of our nation in recent days. When the Maggie Dawn Show continues, we'll talk about those major pieces of legislation right here on the broadcast stations of Civic Media.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.